And we're back. This is my list, best movies I saw 2011, the top nine. And if you just skip down to see to listen to this one first, that's okay. Please go back and listen to at least my surprises of 2011. If you've watched them all in order, then we'll move on. But I do think that eventually you should listen to the other ones, because they kind of, if you listen to them after this, you'll see, well, I can see where he's coming from, and I noticed some of these others came up before. Okay, so number nine, X-Men First Class. This is the best X-Men movie of them all. There's no question to that. They finally were able to get the right cast with the right story, with the right direction. Everything came together, and it's fun to watch. And it's fun to see the different viewpoints from different sides. And Kevin Bacon this is the best Kevin Bacon's been in a good 5 or 6 years, maybe even longer. He was really good in this. There were some problems. January Jones is probably the worst actress on the planet, although she's didn't make my worst actress this year. She's just lifeless. They could have gotten anybody else to play that role better. Patrick Stewart would have been better than January Jones was. But I've never liked January Jones, so that may just be my personal bias against her. But they, as I said, they managed to pull out a good story with a good cast. And the recreation of the first scene from X-Men was just spectacular. I honestly thought it was, they just pulled that footage and then they managed to move it on. But no, they from what I've heard, they actually reshot that scene, and it was almost seamless. If you looked really closely, you might be able to see some differences, but I was just blown away by that. It looked really good. It looked just like it did when the first movie came out. And then having Fassbinder play Magneto was just, that's the best I've seen Fassbinder in. And I've seen him pop up in a couple of things here and there. He was in Band of Brothers. He was in, he was in Jonah Hex last year, just as an incidental role, but really came out and he's been popping up in places. I just a couple of days ago saw him in Haywire, and he was good in that. Where he's popping up and what he's doing has just been amazing. And he was great as Magneto. I would praise everybody in their roles except for January Jones. I like that they made what became the villain mutants to be more sympathetic. You have Mystique and Beast talking back and forth, and Beast is originally Hank McCoy has no visible physical impairments. He looks normal. He's just got opposable big toes, and he doesn't want to have those, so he injects himself with something he thinks will reverse it, and it makes it worse. And the people who are saying, well, you're beautiful the way you are, they're the villains. And the heroes are the people who are saying, no, we need to coexist, we need to hide, we need to look normal. And I like that the better personal self-image was presented by the villains of the movie than by the heroes. I didn't like that they killed Oliver Platt, but that was unfortunately incidental to something that pretty much had to happen in the storyline to progress it. But other than that, it was the best true comic book movie that came out. And I'm going to have another one on here that's ostensibly a comic book movie, but really, comic book movies are Marvel or DC. Hellboy was a comic book movie, but not really. Because it wasn't an adaptation, really, of the comic books. It was a movie version of Hellboy. Whereas this, the argument can be made either way, but it really is more an adaptation of the comic books, how that they came together. Number 8, Lucky. This one squeaked in, just squeaked in, to be my number 8 best movie of last year. I like to kind of switch it up, that it's not everything on this list is something I saw in a theater, and that it had to be in a theater or it just wasn't that good. Truth is that I don't think that a theatrical release necessarily means quality, because there's a lot of crap. Hell, I've already done a list of 9 movies I hated. All of them got theatrical releases. All of them were crap. This didn't get a big theatrical release, if it got one at all. I'm not even sure it was released theatrically, but it was released last year on DVD, and I could purchase it. And it was really good. I talked about it when I was talking about the surprises of 2011, and it really was a big surprise. It came out of nowhere. I'd heard about it, but not been able to see it until very late in the year. But I picked it up. It was released in 2011. I didn't see it until 2012, so it kind of squeaked in. I did see it before the 9th. And some of the other ones I saw late, but this one I did see before the 9th, so it did qualify for this list. And it really is the last movie that got put on the list. And it bumped... actually, I think it bumped Conan off the list. I really liked Conan, but it... too much of it. It was behind X-Men, and so it got bumped. But Lucky was a good movie, and just because it didn't get a theatrical release doesn't mean it shouldn't be put on the list of best movies you see in the year. Number 7, Cowboys and Aliens. Now, I may be prejudiced in my opinion of Cowboys and Aliens, because I saw it immediately after seeing The Smurfs, which was one of the worst movies I saw last year. It actually tied for the worst movie last year. But I saw Cowboys and Aliens immediately afterwards, and I thought it was the best performance that Harrison Ford has given in a very, very long time. He's been walking through roles for a better part of 15 years, and this, it actually seemed that he cared about what was happening in this movie, and he was actually putting in a performance, and he was emoting, he was actually being a human being during this, and it really showed through in the part. Now, Daniel Craig is Daniel Craig, and I can't really say much more to his acting ability. I don't think he's a good James Bond, but they obviously do, if they're producing him in more of them. But to be honest, he wasn't bad in this. The characters who came in and you didn't know that they were going to be in this movie. Like, going into it, I didn't know Sam Rockwell was in this movie. And he's great. Clancy Brown? Didn't know he was going to be in this, and he is great. Just the little things that were in there. I actually did like the design of the aliens. I thought it was silly to have the little arms on the inside, but... I thought that was a fun little thing they put in there. And I know this was adapted from a comic book, but it was adapted from an indie comic. And to be honest, that's barely going to qualify in my mind for being a comic book movie. Because not a lot of people are going to read indie comics, even ones when they find out that they're going to be released in movie theaters. So that... yeah, it was a comic book movie, but it really wasn't that big a comic book movie. I heard about the movie way before I heard about the comic. In fact, I didn't even see a copy of the comic until a couple of months after I saw the movie. So I really don't consider it a comic book movie by my standard, but I do consider it one of the better movies I saw last year, and that's why I put it at number 7. Number 6, Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. Now, this is a movie that had a storied travel to me seeing it. I did see a work print of it, but it was way underdone. I have, since it came out on Blu-ray, I've actually bought it the day it was released on Blu-ray, and it's much better on Blu-ray. It was fun to watch it the way I saw it originally, but it was bad quality. It was missing effects, missing a couple of scenes that were in the actual release that were much better. It's a fun movie, and Alan Tudyk is thankfully not playing the lead in here, and so he gets to be a little bit more free with what he's doing. He gets to have more fun with it, or at least appear to have more fun with it. And he's always much better as a supporting character playing a character rather than the lead. Now, the lead in the movie isn't bad. I can't remember his name. Not really going to look it up. He's not bad in it, but it really is Alan Tudyk that makes this movie really, really enjoyable, and the frat kids getting killed. I know I don't really watch a lot of slasher movies, but this was a good reversal of that. Whereas the hillbillies and the rednecks have no idea what's going on, and the college kids are killing themselves around them because they're just too stupid to take a moment and figure out what's going on before attacking. And it's just fun to watch the reversal on that. And so that's why it was number 6 for 2011. Number 5, The Muppets. I did cry when they did the opening. This was a great movie. It's number 5 on my list, so there's a few better movies that actually have managed to slip in. And it's just a really... it's a Muppet movie that I wanted. My favorite Muppet movie is The Great Muppet Caper. I love the little cameos they have in there. I like the storyline. I like how they presented that Muppets can be born into families, that they're not all created, because the Muppets didn't ever seem to have a creator in their movies, but they were there. They existed. And so the idea that there was a family that has a human son and a Muppet son, and they live together, and that the Muppet son has to adjust to living in a world that's created for people that are much bigger than he is, that made sense to me. Some of the songs were kind of iffy, but Chris Cooper playing the villain was actually really funny, and doing the menacing laugh, just was a great joke that they followed through. I would have liked to have seen Beaker in it more. But that's really my only kind of fight one way or the other on that. Number 4. Really, number 4 is a double itself. I was looking over this list and I can't believe I forgot this one. But originally this was just going to be Paul. With Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and Seth Rogen, and it was funny. It was a proper send up of sci-fi alien conspiracy fans, but also with this, I'm going to put Hugo in here because I also did like Hugo. Hugo was a really strong contender for best movie that came out. It's the best Scorsese's ever done. Now, why would I put it here instead of a little higher if I thought it was really good? Because at the same time, it does have a couple of flaws in it. Nothing that detracts it from being good, but just pull it down from being great. And so Paul had some problems with it, some pacing problems. And some of the explanations are a little iffy in Paul. But in Hugo, it's not a question of pacing. It's a question of it's a movie for kids, but I'm not sure kids are really going to enjoy really learning about silent films. I mean, I love silent films. I've seen everything that Georges Méliès has that I can get my hands on. But I'm not sure if some of what was going on is really going to play well to kids. The book does. The book is targeted better. Scorsese is a good director, and he uses the 3D very well. It could have been slightly better. Little less sentimental in places and a little stronger on some of the character development. But otherwise, it's an overall very good movie. And that's the same with Paul. It could have been directed slightly better. But Peg and Frost are lovable in those parts, and therefore the only real distraction is Weig. I just can't get a handle on her. She's like Sudeikis. They think that she's funny, and so they put her into things. She's not as annoying as that guy is, but she could be better. I don't find her as funny as other people do. And so that kind of pulled back on Paul. Number two. Perfect Host and Young Adult. These tied for number two. Now, the reason why they tied for number two is The Perfect Host was a really amazing psychological movie. It's funny. David Hyde Pierce, unfortunately, he's not going to get nominated for anything, but he deserves to get at least nominated. I wouldn't give him the win, but I would give him the nomination. He really does manage to play the two sides that he does in that role. And I'm not going to spoil it for you because I actually do want you to watch this movie in any way you can. Get it on DVD, get it on Blu-ray, watch it on Netflix if it comes onto there. If it ever comes on TV, watch this movie and watch it from the beginning. If you catch it in the middle, stop. Go back and try to find it when it's going to come on next and watch it from the beginning, because it really is the kind of movie you don't want to have missed anything. Watch this movie. Watch it a couple of times. You will enjoy it every time. Now, Young Adult is number two on this list is because it was one of the biggest surprises. It was the biggest surprise I had of the year, and it was just amazing as far as movies go. It didn't speak to me as, say, some people would say movies do, because if anything, I'm more of the Patton Oswalt character in it, who is a supporting character. But I know people like Charlize Theron in here. Now, I don't particularly care for her when she does serious roles, but she was really good in this. And in fact, she won for Monster. She probably should win for this. They've already given it to her for Monster, so they probably won't even nominate her for this, but she was amazing in this. This is convergence of the right cast again, the right writing, and Jason Reitman just knowing how to direct this sort of movie. He really does have a little niche going, and it's very worthwhile to watch what he's doing in it. Sofia Coppola should be slitting her wrists for not having done this movie, because this is the kind of movie that she sort of, it feels like she's attempting to do, but fails at making. This movie is just that much better than anything else I've seen any of these people in. And that's, it may not be saying much for some of them, but it is just one of the best. It was the second best movie I saw last year. And the number one movie for 2011 is The Artist. What can I say about a year in film when the best movie was a silent, black and white, 3x4 movie written, directed, and starring French people? The writer and director was French, and the star was French. For a silent film, it has music, the way all silent films do have music, but when it uses sound, it uses it the way that movies need to use sound. If this doesn't get nominated, bare minimum, for sound design, then they should never give away the Oscar for sound design again. There's a scene in this movie where, I mean, throughout a silent, you don't hear sound effects. You don't hear things happening. All you hear is music, and you get title boxes every once in a while, and there were very few of them, but you don't really need them in this movie. But there's a scene about 20, 30 minutes in where you start hearing sound. It's a dream sequence, and he can't talk, but you can hear everything happening around him. Like, he knocks things over. You hear, you don't notice how deafening the sound of putting a pen down is until you've gone 30 minutes into a movie and you've not heard when people have set down glasses. You see the motion of a glass going down, you don't see anything. You don't really notice it, and then they play the scene and he sets a glass down and you hear the clunk as it hits the table, and you're surprised and he's surprised, and he plays it perfectly. This is the best movie I saw last year. I'm not entirely sure that any movie I've seen that I'll see this year will be as good, or any movie that I've seen in the last few years has been as good. King's Speech might be close. King's Speech was very, very good, but King's Speech had the benefit of you being able to hear what they're saying. It was a movie about sound. This is a movie about there not being sound. And it holds that, and it is strong throughout. It makes you want to see more and more, and it progresses the way a good silent film did, but it's also doing it at a feature-length level. It is as long as a normal feature-length movie now, which would be 30, 40 minutes longer than the average silent movie was at the time. It's really a pleasure to watch, but you really need to have the right kind of crowd. Because if you get a crowd who's talking or moving or making any noise, they're going to hurt your ability to hear some of what's going on. And really, you need the music is the only auditory cue you're getting to what's going on, and it really is very well chosen music. There's more I can say about this movie, but I'm just ramble on for an hour about this movie, and it's worth seeing. Get it on DVD as soon as it comes out. If it's in your town, go and see it. See it multiple times. It's very well worth it. They need to make more movies like this. Maybe not silent, but they need to make more movies where they're actually caring about what's going on the screen rather than just how many people they can get to sit in the theater. Because it's obvious that this movie is more about it being a good movie than a popular movie. Because if they were going for popular, it wouldn't be black and white, it wouldn't be silent, it wouldn't be from 4x3. It's just that good a movie, and you need to see it. See it a bunch of times. So that is my list of top 9 movies, technically 10 movies, of 2011. These are all the movies I saw. Now, there were some movies I didn't see. As I said in the first list of the movies I wanted to see, some of those might have broken the top 10. I'm not sure, though. Some of them might have been good, but I'm not sure they would have really broken into this and been the best movies. So, really, these are, I'm confident to say, the best movies that I saw and would have seen for this past year. I'm planning to see a lot more movies. The next recording is going to be of individuals, I thought, did a particularly good job, or that will be, I'm not sure how I can really word it. It's kind of the mini Boy and Horse Awards. I'll see you there.